welcome to the next 100 Days podcast. My name is Graham Arrowsmith.
And my name's Kevin Appleby. So, Graham, I'm looking forward to today. We're talking about executive presence.
Something that you've probably had an awful lot of in your career, being, a present executive. Well, we've got on the show Ash. I want to say his name is Sadiq, and it's spelled SEDDDEEK. So this eek at the end is the kind of a sort of thing that happens to you when you meet Ash, because he's quite an imposing fella. He's all the way from California. Ash, Sadiq, welcome to the next 100 Days podcast.
Thank you so much for having me, Graham and Kevin.
Well, I mean, it's been a pleasure looking at your background. I mean, who you haven't coached isn't worth knowing. I mean, Google and Cisco. I mean, crikey, you know the big and the great in, but particularly in California. Well, assuming that they're still based in California, because
That is true, yeah.
they're doing their best to get rid of all the productive companies, aren't they, by overtaxing them and all the rest of that.
There
But
is definitely some movement out of state because of taxes, yes.
yeah, but t tell us then. First of all, tell us a little bit about Ash Sadiq.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Graham. So I hail from the country of Egypt, where I was going to become a linguist and an English language teacher, actually. And then I found out that in Egypt and the US, they don't pay teachers a lot of money. So
Too
I
much
got
is too much in the UK, I can promise you that, but
see, yeah. So I ended up getting into corporate training, starting at a financial services company in San Francisco called Charles Schwab. And from there on, got into management consulting. And then I started working for a lot of high-tech companies, where I found out whether that marketing, sales, or whatever it is that you're doing, again, at the very core of everything that's happening is the spoken word and how clearly you articulate it. So later on, I then discovered getting into communication within corporate settings and then also helping a lot of leaders figure out how they can articulate their message as well as inspire audiences. So that's been the journey in a very quick pace.
So, if I might summarize, so we can get to the end of the podcast, you're a script writer. So it's really been nice meeting you. No, is there more to it than that? I mean, presumably you don't just write
There's
so many
way more
scripts.
to it than that, Graham.
Yes. There's always more to it. So seriously though, I mean, have you ever had to go into one of the C-suite people that you deal with and say, don't write your speech this way, write it that way?
Most often we actually do this, and we find out that 20 minutes into the conversation, the key idea that they want to say should have been said 20 minutes ago. So I basically end up helping them, as you're saying, Graham, rethink the ideas and the sequence of the ideas in order for us to get the best outcome. And that's what's very interesting.
Honestly, I love that. I really love the fact that you can hear something from somebody and realize that it almost needs to be reconstructed, even though it might probably have all the elements. What was it that Morecambe and Wise thing? Is about Andre Previn and playing the piano,
Oh,
and
that's right. It was
he was
play
butchering it, wasn't he, Eric
playing all the
Morecambe?
right notes, but not necessarily in the right order.
That was it. That's so actually they've got all the right notes, but not necessarily the right order. And you come along and you.
And absolutely, Graham, it's fascinating how the order makes a huge difference, because a lot of the time some leaders like to get to the details because they think that's where their experience is going to shine. And a lot of the time they actually forget giving people what's the bigger picture? What's the why?
Right.
Why should we even listen to these details? So that's really to your point. I help them look at it as a movie and think about that crime scene because that gets everybody's attention. What is the one thing that you would say on the front end of your talk that will get people to lean in and say, what happened and why? And how do we find out more?
I work with an American every week called Dr. Flint McLaughlin, and he's kind of a leader in conversion methodology. He's living on a mountain in Montana right now, but basically, one of the things he talks about is story click. So this it's a movie concept, but it's this idea when you're watching a movie and you think, I kind of get where he's going now. That first bit's a bit, maybe a bit confusing, but I really get where it's going. You wonder whether or not when somebody's speaking to an audience of their employees or shareholders or whatever, there has to be that story click moment, that moment in the speech
Love that.
that basically says, I get it now. I don't know, is that something that appears with you?
It's very similar because once you hook them up, and a lot of the time we definitely recommend using stories because story is almost like opening a door, and the three of us walk through that door together, and we start looking to the right and the left and looking at the trees together. That togetherness creates an amazing hook, to your point, that the audience then is much more willing to say, let me walk with Graham and Kevin on this journey.
Got you. I mean, this, Kevin, it's a fantastic area. I bet you wish you were Ash, don't you?
Oh, definitely. And I think Ash is talking about something that is really more necessary than ever. Now, we're in the world of AI now, and words are becoming cheap. Words can be plowed out by Claude, ChatGPT, Gemini, whatever it is, very, very easily. What is not going to be replaced is the spoken word. The word and the persona of the individual are things that are now increasing in value hugely. And I think anything you can do to absolutely improve the way you communicate that spoken word and get the message across is absolutely key.
Absolutely. And what I ended up doing actually in my consulting practice is to get what you just said, Kevin, and think about when you are in the company of Kevin or Graham or Ash, it has to be unique and different to your point, rather than let's say what I'm getting from an AI tool or an email that can be sent. So when we are together, we want to then celebrate that opportunity and think about how do we show up in a way that everybody feels like, oh my goodness, it is so amazing to be in a meeting with this person because I understand the business a whole lot better. I understand exactly what I need to do clearly, and I walk away energized. This idea of walking away energized is so rare that when it does happen, then everybody is amazed at how did that happen? How can we do this again? Because to your point, you want to make it memorable. So we end up talking a lot more about not only getting the idea across clearly, and we talk about storytelling, but we also talk about this idea of how can you actually make it memorable? Because if they do remember the action items, we have a high likelihood that the action items will happen.
I mean, we're living in the UK, and of course, at the moment, we don't want to take it down a rabbit hole, but basically, we have some, it's almost like a totalitarian government that basically is trying to persuade us not to say certain things in a certain order. It's back to the joke again, but it feels like a joke that you can't criticize certain policies or certain things that are happening in our society without getting a knock on the door from, His Majesty's police. So the problem with that is that speech is not free. And actually, in some ways, it's probably more valuable now than it's ever been, because there's something innately wrong with what this government is trying to do to its people to stop them talking. Whereas in America, bless you've got a lot more latitude. You can say pretty much what you want. And for me, the difference at the moment between America, the speech in America, and the speech over here is, it's light years apart. And that's not right, given that we gave the world, crikey, we ruled 75% of
Absolutely,
the world at one point. And I think that is, I don't know what's wrong with this country that it feels that it can do that. But this comes back down to speech. Ash, is there such a thing as hate speech?
I do believe words do have an impact, and I think that's really that's at the core of your message is that words are a vehicle in order for us to gain motion and hopefully forward motion because a lot of companies are struggling with so much going on. I mean, you're talking about AI and it's become such an important dynamic that a lot of companies are saying. We have to get 15, 20, 30% out of AI efficiencies or effectiveness. And that is creating a lot of pressure in a lot of organizations. So then we come back and realize that, oh my goodness, if I can just articulate my message in a way that gets people moving in a certain direction, and if that movement is a bit faster than it is in the neighborhood, the other company that's across the street, then I will actually get a much better result. And we ended up talking about this idea of organizational alpha, that some companies, it's almost like, again, I love, of course, the English Premier League, and I watch Mo Salah with Liverpool, of course, being an Egyptian myself. You realize that sometimes it's the same team, but then you change the coach, and all of a sudden you have a whole different story because you move the pieces differently, you end up getting different results.
Well,
And we
given that
see
we're
this.
playing against Mo Salah on Saturday, I just hope he has another duff game, and along with his colleagues. But that's another thing. But no, the one of the things that was really interesting to me was this idea of investor pitches. Are they significant? If you got the same guy, probably the guy who's the head of the organization, he's not going to do every investor pitch. He'll have people to do that. But having said that, he might be rolled out to make the big pitch for the big money. Monday's talking to the employees, on Tuesday in talking to the investors. What are the significant differences between those two speech bubbles? I don't know what's the right word. I'm talking one way to the employees. I'm talking the same way, maybe.
I think you're really hitting an important point, which is as much as the audience changes, you have to change the way you deliver the message. And it really comes from this idea of putting yourself in their shoes. So the employee wants to hear that we're going to be okay, that the company's doing well. The investor wants to find out how much of an opportunity this is and what is the multiple that I'm going to get on my money for, of course, for the investors that he's representing. And I think a lot of the time we get so much wrapped up in the message that we do actually forget the audience.
So that's really important. It just seems so obvious when you live in direct marketing every day that you've got to write to the person, and actually you often write just to the one person that you've got in mind, and the rest of them nominally look like that one person. So you're trying to write to Alice because Alice is your target, if you like,
Target profile, yeah.
and in that case, your investors, and you're kind of. I don't know, is that part of a technique that you use, Ash, with your investor speeches?
Definitely. We do actually spend some time thinking about very much like what I love what you said, because that's where I picked up a lot of lessons when I got exposed to copywriting and understanding how do you write an effective marketing message. And I realized that when you are preparing an investor pitch, we have to study the investors that are going to be in the room, what companies they represent, what deals they invested in, what is their investment thesis. And as much as I understand about them, then I have to craft my message to talk to the conversations in their head, right? As you're thinking about target profiles, very, very effective point you're making, because I hope more people will do the same thing. But most of the time, they get wrapped up in the PowerPoint slides. They walk in, they think, oh, I'm going to just, check the box off. And it doesn't happen that way.
I can see that what you've done here is you've created a niche, if you like, that you're the guy that can come along and save the day, because if he walks in with a red suit with a Liverpool badge on it, and he sat in front of a load of, I don't know, Everton supporters, it's not necessarily going to go down very well.
That's
So,
right.
but so the whole idea of it is to, so if he can manage the way in which he's presenting, but then you come along and you save him from himself or herself, and actually create a better version of themselves, whether it's copy or whether it's just the presentation skills. Is it that as well? Do you actually show them how to
Yeah, definitely. And that's where when I was working at Cisco, I saw how large companies have the luxury of understanding that if we want to do things right, we have to go back 6 months and plan ahead. And that
But there's a
planning ahead.
challenge, planning ahead 6 months when you talk about delivering messages.
Yeah,
And we
or even
change too quick to do that.
yeah. Or even if you take a few days, because a lot of the time they don't take the time, unfortunately. They think, oh, I can wing it. I know how to speak really well, so I'm just going to go in and do really well.
So, is it possible for you to assess the marginal gains that you offer clients? I don't know. It's almost like a, I don't know if you call it a blind test, was it? Right, go ahead then, chum. Do your speech to the Everton fans and see how far you get. Versus maybe wear a blue suit and a blue tie and, do what Everton fans do, whatever that is. Inbreed, most of it, but genuinely, that they would actually, at least you've dealt with the kind of connectivity.
Absolutely,
If
yeah.
is there a way in which you can measure the sort of the added value that you would bring, Ash, with your work?
Usually the best thing that happened, and I've been coaching one of the VPs at Uber, where she goes in and she talks to the board of directors. And of course, the best thing that happens usually is after the meeting, she'll come and say, I did well. She herself has her own, of course, assessment of how, the before and after. But then when her leader comes to her and says, this was really well articulated, to us, usually that is the moment we're looking for, because this gives us confirmation that people are noticing. So it's observable behavior that we see. When they see your confidence handling a question that's coming in, where last time they saw you getting flustered, then they can say something happened.
I honestly, that makes such a so coaching and certainly questions, because you can fall apart when it comes to that. It's maybe a bit like being on a podcast where you don't know what the question is going to be, like this one. So basically, but you're handling that really well, Ash, because you're practiced and you're never going to get flustered until Kevin comes up with his banger question, which he normally does at 3 quarters into the meeting. But
I've got one waiting.
have you? I'm sure you have. But no, I think I like the fact that, I mean, you've on your site here, you talk about Brendan Burchard, who I've watched a bit, and I don't know Roger Love, and I don't really know Bo e Eason, but they've obviously taught you things. But Brendan Burchard is a, I seem to remember, he's quite an effervescent sort of guy,
Oh, he is,
and
yeah.
he comes across really, really well. You've taken inspiration from some pretty impressive people.
Definitely observing and learning, because I think we can argue that a learning from others is a huge catalyst for speed, and that's what I tried. I watched people like Burchard. I also watched leaders at Cisco speaking and comparing notes between which one is really good at it and which one is not so good at it, because then you can see the audience. And I was a content strategy manager on the largest conference that happens at Cisco. So my role was to not only help them with the messaging, but also the idea of how do we deliver an impactful conference session so that people get energized about Cisco for the next year. So I realized, oh my goodness, it's more about the emotion.
But isn't it in, if it's a conference, isn't it more about the bar? And how much time they're going to spend in that bar? Oh, I'm
That's
sorry.
right. That too,
I
for
don't mean to.
sure.
I don't mean to
But
denigrate any of your work, but I mean,
absolutely,
wait a
yeah.
minute, Graham.
It's
Wait a minute.
experience. Go
Okay,
ahead, Kevin.
you've got some of the people you're looking at here on your website. Some of the examples, and there's just looking at John Chambers, Steve Jobs, Tim Cook. There's a picture of Tony Robbins on there. Now, there's something extra about these individuals, whether you've got those people up on the stage, in the boardroom, or even in the bar. There's a presence about these people
Love
before
it.
you start. And what is it that gives you that presence that kind of gets people listening to them and respecting them in the first place, Ash?
I love that, and that's really where you really are hitting the core point here, which is this idea of excitement, this idea of energy. To your point, it's we call it presence, we energy sometimes, and that's why I ended up essentially building a practice around the concept of executive chief excitement officer. And chief excitement officers is essentially an idea that is trying to help us embody what you just said, Kevin, about when these people walk in the room, people take notice. So the question then would be, how can we help others get that into their system? So we end up basically talking about the idea of personal branding, how you want to be seen in that meeting. So we end up again kind of talking about the few hours before you go into that meeting. So this idea of back-to-back meetings, or I'm rushing from the airport to the meeting to this to that, we basically say that is a recipe for disaster, because by the time you walk in the room, people can see that the shirt is all messed up. You know, I mean, everything is not ready for showtime. So to your point, these people, they do get a lot of coaching and a lot of practice to know I need to not only play the part, but look the role.
If you had you let's just say you've got a new client, and he asks, and you sat there and you're thinking, it's looking good, this, I'm going to get this. Then they say, well, tell me who, in your opinion, and what the reasons are for that opinion, who is the best male speaker that you've come across? You might not necessarily have worked with them, but you know them to be on their game, and the best female. Do you have one of either? And what reasons would you say they're at the either were or are at the top of the game?
I think in the US, it's interesting you mentioned politics earlier, but in the US, there's a gentleman by the name of Jeffrey Sachs. He's a professor, lots of books, consultants, as well as an advisor. He speaks really well. He articulates the message, he organizes his ideas. You could follow his line of thought. And he's not your typical corporate stage person. Because of and I have been interested in the clarity that his style communicates, because a lot of the time, sometimes for my clients, I need to find examples, to your point, and then I share them with my clients. And then there is a lady in New York, she works for a financial services company. Her name is Carla Harris. She has a number of talks on YouTube, and again, her presence, to your point, Kevin, her presence, her energy, the way she delivers her talks, fantastic example. So I keep actually sharing that with a lot of my clients, especially the females among them, to basically show them, here is an example of someone who is well spoken, well dressed, brings a lot of energy, knows that energy is important. So you can see that she packed it up before getting on the stage.
I found with emergent, not necessarily optimized salespeople, they'll and particularly on the telephone, they are often guilty of talking too fast. It's almost like their words have been blurred together. And as somebody who's getting older, and I might not be hard of hearing, but I'm, shall we say, in I become hard of hearing when I get that. And it's almost, do they realize that they're destroying their energy, they're destroying their pitch? And I is there a pace at which you've got to talk that maybe is not too slow, but also has enough undulation in it? Is that the right word? But basically
Variety,
enables you
absolutely,
to grab you in.
absolutely. We talk. One of the programs I do at Cisco, it's a training program. So we actually talk about this idea that, to your point, a lot of the time people are speaking too fast because a lot of the time it's lack of confidence. They are worried somebody's going to stop them and ask a question. So we have to go through the skill development and basically say what we want to get to is to move from presentations to conversations. And if you're coming to have a conversation, you're going to have to slow down. You're going to have to slow down.
That's a brilliant point. I can see that you've mastered. I mean, I haven't found one, but I'm sure you've written a book, or is that in your plan?
Yeah, we have we I have a number of books. One book is on this idea of how leaders create meaning through the conversations and talks that they give.
Okay.
And then I have another book on some of the secrets that I saw Silicon Valley speakers bring to the stage. And we
Right.
put some ideas in that book as well.
And presumably the sil well were the Silicon Valley people the kind of did you learn an awful lot about pitching to investors at that point, or pitching their ideas?
Definitely, it's definitely part of what we cover, and I think you and Kevin are really honing in on the idea that a lot of the time it is the energy that they bring into the room. So we focus on how do we actually create that,
Right.
because then by the time we get onto the stage, we have to have the confidence already built in, we have to have built the executive presence, gone through some exercises where we can do Q&A where people feel confident in the delivery of their message. And that's to your point, Graham, that's really where the opportunity that I find, where a lot of leaders unfortunately have been trying to craft their own domain knowledge, but then when it comes to the delivery, that's where they need help sometimes, and that's where some of the work I do comes in.
How did what do they what do they search in Google to find you? Well, oh no, never mind Google. What do they search in chat now to find you?
I think they will search speaker coaches potentially, or communication coaching.
Right.
So
So
that's what they do.
you will have much inferior competitors. I mean, you'll be like you're almost Liverpool, aren't you? Let's face it. I mean, there's still teams like Leeds above you, but I mean, at the end of the day, you can aspire. But at the
Yes.
end of the, no, I'm only kidding. You clearly, can there be many other people as good as you in your field?
There are definitely a few players and people that I've learned from, and I think there's always an opportunity to find a way to help your client improve, even if 5 or 10%, and you let them feel a little bit more confident. I think you've done something amazing, and I've seen at Cisco and many other companies there are hundreds of people who have the role of executive communications manager. They play the role of support team with the executives, and I think a lot of them do amazing work because they are right there in the trenches with them, helping them get into an all hands meeting or prepare for a conference. And then in some cases they might say, you know what, I think you also would benefit from working with Ash.
Right. That's interesting. That's really interesting.
Ash, let's dig into an example. We've talked about lots of people. You've mentioned Cisco a few times. One of the key people on your website is John Chambers, the former chairman and CEO at Cisco Systems. Now, what is it about John that makes him stand out? I mean, I'm choosing John because I guess working with Cisco is probably the person you've been closest to in this.
Yeah. John he's a perfect example of what you were reflecting on when you thought about this idea that they have this presence and what an energy when they showed up. So the interesting thing about John is he embodied this idea of chief excitement officer. He was so excited about Cisco, he was so excited about technology, about the customer he's talking with, and he knew that one of the most important roles he has in the company is to energize the rest of the organization. Because such a global organization, when he gets on the stage, you can tell that this guy has been busting at the door to get on the stage and talk about all the exciting things that he can see. Because sometimes when you are leading an organization like Cisco, you have to travel to the future and see what the potential is. And of course, you're trying to get more out of the organization because you can actually see there's a whole lot more potential. If they coordinate better together, if they make decisions at a higher quality and higher pace, and that's really what got him excited. He would go and meet country presidents, he will go and meet company presidents, and a lot of the time he would hear these stories and then come in and share them with people at Cisco. And I thought he was the best example of a chief excitement officer because once he gets on the stage, you can tell the energy in the room changes. And even if he's speaking across a TV connection, you can see the excitement traveling over the air and getting to the audiences.
It's almost like I've got this vision of chief executive officer, and the word executive spins to be chief energy officer and spins again to become chief excitement officer.
Beautiful,
And
yeah.
I wonder whether or not if people were to put to the vote, how many would go energy and how many would go, because I think the chief executive is where they start, but basically if you want to, is it the energy or is it the excitement?
It is the energy. And that's really where we use the word excitement, just to give it language for them to realize that we want you to come in excited with the energy and also excited about the future. Because people are a lot more interested what's going to come up.
Yeah, is excitement a sort of almost like fast acting thing? So it's something that you get and then 3 minutes later. Is energy longer lasting, do you think?
Energy is definitely something that we tell leaders that they need it to be longer lasting, because a lot of the time there's so much demand. They have to travel to the UK, go to Asia, and come all of this. And at the same time, once they get on the stage, there is so much expected of them. So that's to your point. We definitely talk about corporate athletes as a concept where if you want to be in that role, then you better get your sneakers on and start exercising, because it does require a lot of energy from you. And the excitement piece is not so much that you would ignore the fact that there might be some risks in the business. We want you to do that variation so people realize, oh my goodness, now there's a moment where we need to know that there are some challenges ahead.
Interesting. I
I
know
help
that
them with that.
I wanted to pick up on, do you call it duh or do AI? I don't know how you pronounce it. Do you're doing you is this kind of idea of actually bringing new businesses to market, new AI businesses to get to market? That's part of your life as well, isn't it?
I started recently looking at how AI can be used to help people communicate better in organizations. And the way I talk about it with the American slang, where I basically call it, it's a da AI, in the sense that it's something that's very obvious and should exist, but
Right.
it doesn't yet. And we're trying to
Oh,
bring
you,
it to
oh, duh, you should have. Yeah, it's like the
exactly.
Homer
Exactly. I
Simpson.
just see Homer Simpson
Yeah,
saying
yeah,
that.
yeah, yeah. So you've got all right. So that it should. It nobody's got to it yet, but this guy has or this girl has. Brilliant. Yeah.
Yeah,
So.
exactly. Yeah, that's what we're trying to bring to market, is this idea of how can we actually get everybody in the organization to go in the software and actually tell others in the organization by filling out their profile and saying, when you communicate with me, you better use bullet points, because I like brevity, conciseness, because I don't have a lot of time. So we will actually get everybody in the organization to enter those communication preferences, so that when Kevin or Graham is just about to write an email to Ash, they can actually see what are the communication preferences. A lot of the time we wish we knew what those were, because then it's going to help us make sure the message is customized for the audience. But right now there's no solution right now that tells us what the communication preferences are. And that's a piece of software that we're working on right now.
That's interesting. Very interesting. I'm fascinated by exactly that point about taking situations where you, and actually maybe adding things that just weren't possible before with the power of AI and software that goes with it. We
Amazing, yeah.
yeah but that is a really interesting thing that you're doing. So given that we've touched on the sort of business that you're doing right now, do you see a situation, Ash, that you might be doing this or delivering this in a different way in 5 years' time?
I do believe that AI is definitely going to transform a lot of the activities that we are doing. And I think, to your point, we need to continue to evolve in figuring out how do we work together with AI and make it part of how we create value. So I was just talking with my daughter yesterday, and I said, I have been able to do in 2025 a whole lot more with the availability of Claude and ChatGPT. I think without these tools, I would not have traveled as far as I have within 2025. And I think when you look ahead, it's just fascinating how much more. So I think that as much as we embrace, we'll be able to hopefully discover more opportunities.
I absolutely certain.
Do you see a position where a lot of what you do could be replaced by an AI agent? For example, the CEO is rehearsing, instead of rehearsing in front of you and you giving feedback, they're rehearsing in front of a camera, and the AI agent behind the camera watching is then telling, is marking them and giving them the points for improvement.
I think definitely right now there are tools that do exactly that, Kevin. You're totally right. And I think what is continues to be valuable is people looking for, hopefully, for another human being that looks them in the eye and says, here is the truth. Because I think sometimes the tool is not going to know that there's something that somebody should be telling Ash or Kevin or Graham. And if you have the trust that you build with an executive and you're able to actually share with him something that everybody around him is actually afraid to tell him, that's where some of that high trust relationships are going to be very key. And that's what I think executives would look for, is having those trusted partners where they can say, hey, how did I come across in that meeting? What was really going on? And I can basically tell them, you missed out on this signal that was in the room. And those will be hopefully the precious differentiated things that might happen besides the availability of AI.
It just occurs to me, this sort of blend of AI and presenting. I wonder, Kevin, when we find the first avatar who comes on, it actually could have happened today. Ash might actually be an avatar. So he's just responding to our questions. We don't know he's in California. It could be he's in
That's
some. He's
right.
like, it's just a series of zeros and ones. But the point that he managed to get the Liverpool reference in and so far, he understood. But the
I've
point
done some
being is,
research, and now we like talking about football on this
and
podcast.
but you
That's
see,
right.
how would we know? And the thing is, it seems to me that certainly within 5 years, you could have a facsimile of a chief executive presenting absolutely cogently, absolutely well structured with your help, but in every major city in America at the same time. I don't mean via Zoom. It well, kind of it would, I suppose it would be, but depends if it's a sort of robot of some. But the point, what I'm trying to get at is that could those avatars be everywhere at the same, around the world, for instance, at the same time, answering different questions, but being as credible as the person themselves? I don't know if that is it even.
I think definitely they are going, we're going to see technology pushing the envelope in a lot of ways. And I think to your point, the question would be how far before we can feel the diminishing returns. And I think that's one thing where a lot of people are not realizing, whether you use agentic AI or anything, at the very end of the day, you need customers that are going to the store and buying stuff. And if they don't have the money, how can they buy anything?
Well, that's yeah, which brings us back to the UK. But no, it's an absolutely fascinating area of the world that you're working in. I mean, Kevin was going to give you a really tough question, but obviously he's been sat there just enjoying that
You
laugh.
didn't like the questions I posed,
Well,
Graham.
yeah,
I thought I did give him some
no,
tough ones.
well, yes,
No,
definitely.
I am thinking down one line though, and this idea of your CEO being the chief excitement officer, the CFO is now going to transform into being the chief fun officer.
Oh right,
That's right.
yeah.
That's
You
right.
know, there are other Fs that would fit for that as well,
We've
but
got to just lose this image of finance says no.
yeah, no. But I do genuinely. It's been a wonderful conversation, Ash. Sadly, we have to bring it to a close at this stage. But if you wanted to give one message out there to future clients, maybe, or maybe to other people who might not be your client, but these are the sort of two or three things that you would want to impart. What would they be?
I think definitely I would remind them of what we mentioned today, which is this idea of get to know your audience for sure. And we would encourage them to learn more about storytelling because it gets everybody to focus on their message. And then definitely, as Kevin said, bring some energy for God's sake.
Yeah, no, He was thinking about Newcastle United because they need some at the moment, Kevin. But I don't know
Oh, you
about
haven't heard our new chief executive talking yet.
No.
He's made a public statement today, Graham, that says we're going to win the Premier League within the next 5 years.
Oh, good for
Oh,
him. Good for him. He's
that's
clearly demented then. So
awesome. That's exactly what we need.
yeah, but on that bombshell, Ash Sadiq, thank you very much for being a brilliant guest on the next 100 Days podcast.
So, Graham, I think there's some good messages coming from Ash today. Be present, think about your audience, know what the message is that you want to get across, but as well know what the audience need to hear. Now, it's very important to adapt the message to the audience, but I think the key thing that we started talking about quite a lot was having presence, which is something that sits to me above whatever the words are that you're using, you know?
I don't think it matters whether you're a girl or a boy when it comes to doing that, you know. And at the end of the day, if you're presenting, you know, Ash is going to get you from, you know, good to great, and I think that's his skill set. And why wouldn't you want to become great at presenting? You know, more investors, more motivated, you know, customers, more, you know, happier employees. I mean, boy, the stakes are really high.
And we talked about presenting to investors a few times today. And, you know, think about those early stage investments, not the ones later on where you've got a clear history of profit in the company and the investors know what they're buying into. That early stage piece, you know, they're buying into an idea and the individuals that are running with the idea. And that communication and selling yourself to the investors becomes really, really important. If you can create that trust and that feeling of excitement in what it is you're trying to put across, then you're going to win.
I think it's been a fascinating conversation. I kind of envy his role, actually. I think it's a it, you know, because people will respect his, you know, the degree of experience and the people that he's dealt with. But
And
the
in the world of AI, I think that authority is going to become so valuable. That's
well, it is. That's
the bit
exactly
that
it.
any of the AI agents are never going to bring. They're never going to bring the authority of an individual like Ash.
Well, I'm really hesitant to say things like that, Kevin, because I think it's a bit like, you know, you don't know. I mean, the speed of change of AI is so rapid. It's very, very difficult to rule out anything. And
Oh, I agree. I agree, Graham.
I know what you mean, and we are humans, and AI is not. But the difference is becoming, you know, less and less in the sense of being able to detect one once one is a human, one is not. And I would see a future where a lot of this is just going to be built in, hopefully for the good of the world. But right now,
But I think in terms of
it's
that
different.
building it in, then the live performance of the individual becomes even more important.
The kind of point I was getting to about, you know, having somebody almost being able to step in for somebody. Let's just assume that, you know, if you could create the excitement for John Smith, who's a pretty drab speaker, but the excitement officer John Smith, who's effectively a robot, goes along and wows his audience, goes along and nails every investor question, goes along and gets his employees to work twice as hard. That, who knows? Somebody
Oh,
said, well, it doesn't look
we've
like
been
John, but.
seeing something on those lines for quite some time. And think about that ABBA experience that goes on in London every night with holograms of the band as they appeared back in their heyday. on stage every night as though they were the real individuals. So, and that had nothing to do with AI.
Thing is, you and I can still remember them, Kevin. And on that sad note, I've been Graham Arrowsmith.
I've been Kevin Appleby. Goodbye.
Goodbye.